whoa. No, man, I'm seriously asking, what is this show, man? Two guys making a podcast, got a lot to say, so we talk fast. If it's Thursday night, say Atlas. Two hosts, not miscast. Mike and Johnny, bring the bomb blast on your Facebook feed, never bypass. Saying bad stuff, leave you flabbergast. Our spots, not super fast. Still, much better than a newscast. Miss the live show, rebroadcast. The Tangent Podcast, never outclassed, man. Tangent Podcast with Mike and Johnny, bringing the schmears. Rock for rookies, represent. Let's get the show started, man.
It's Tangent.
Welcome to episode 5 of season 8 of Tangent Podcast with Mike and Johnny. Alongside Mike, I am Johnny. Mike, today is a great day. It's the best day of every summer. Do you know what day it is?
I have zero idea what day it is.
Every year, and for at least another, 20 or so years, July 1st is Bobby Bonilla Day. Yay! Do you know what Bobby Bonilla Day is? Well, I'll tell you. You notice how I didn't wait for you to respond?
I saw that somebody posted about it, but...
Okay, somebody posted about it, and I made a joke about it, and then somebody got really serious under my comment, and then I commented, I knew I shouldn't have commented on
this
post.
I saw that.
And then that person was like, well, if you think I'm serious about politics, just get me started about baseball. And I almost posted, I don't think about you at all, in response to that, but I didn't, and I just left it be. But so, I really wanted to.
What is Benny Benisti Day?
Benny Benassi? No, it's Bobby Bonilla Day. Bobby Bonilla is a former very good, not a Hall of Famer, but very good baseball player. He was a star in the 90s, and in the late 90s, early 2000s, he was reaching the end of his career, and he was playing for the Mets. And the Mets said, look, we owe you $4 million or so, okay? But we don't want you on the team anymore because you're not as good as you used to be. So what we'd like to do is we want to release you, and then you can go out and play for another team.
Yeah.
And we'll pay you the $4 million that we owe you with crazy interest starting in whatever, 2005, whatever year it was. Now, it happened to be that Bobby Bonilla had seen many, many of his teammates and other friends of his who were athletes retire and lose all their money. So he figured, well, if I do this, that means that I've basically completely taken care of myself. I'm going to get paid, if I let this $4 million go now, I'm going to get paid something in the neighborhood of $25 million with all of this interest later. So, of course, he did it. Well, turns out the Mets lost all this money in the Bernie Madoff scandal.
Okay.
And ended up not being, you know, it hurt them in that way. But, hi Maya, welcome to the show. But the point is that from now on, until he's like 72 years old, Bobby Bonilla, every July 1st, gets a $1.1 million a year from the Mets because of that crazy deal he signed back in the 90s. And it's everybody loves it because it's one of those rare occasions where a player actually kind of stuck it to the team. And if they just would have paid him the $4 million, they're paying him now $25 million over the course of the life of the rest of the deal that they made with him.
That's crazy. So
there's always these stories that come out on July 1st.
Because people usually get screwed.
It's Bobby Bonilla Day. Bobby Bonilla's getting paid $1 million a year, and he hasn't played professional baseball for more than 20 years.
That's crazy. Call it a vote. But I do think that this is... there is no best day of summer.
Okay.
Because when you're in summer, you don't know what day it is.
I mean, when you don't.
I don't. Everyone else who's celebrating summer.
I don't celebrate summer.
Well, then you don't really.
I don't have summers.
You nothing summer.
I sit at home with the air conditioning on.
You nothing summer. Oh, yeah.
Another interesting sports story, and we'll get all the sports stuff out of the way at the top of the show. Just so you know, we're happy to have you.
It's also Bill Cosby is free day.
Okay. We'll get to that.
Sure, that'll, you know.
We'll get to that. But the...
Replace Benny Benassi day.
I hope not. Well, maybe not in the sports. Anyway, so another thing came out, which was... The United States Supreme Court ruled that college athletes are allowed to make money off of their image and likeness. Okay? It used to be that was an egregious breaking of the rules of the NCAA.
That they weren't allowed to get paid for anything, right?
Correct. And it ended up with, like, some teams having to vacate wins, some players getting trophies taken away from them.
Because their players
Because they made had deals little... on the side that was... you know, not kosher at the time. Although everybody in the world was like, yeah, they should get paid. Okay, a rule is a rule, but they should get paid. So now what it means is that, let's say you're a star college football player, right? And a guy who owns, I don't know, he owns a car dealership says, hey, would you like to come down to my car dealership for 2 hours on Sunday? I'll give you $2,000. You sit, sign some autographs, take some pictures, and you're free to go. You can now do that.
That's amazing.
Yes. It's amazing. And what's great about it is the fact that players who come from underprivileged backgrounds, right, they often get to college. Now, they have a full scholarship. That's great. That's not...
But they don't always
not,
continue that, to the NBA.
Forget that. That's not worth it. Not... That's worth something, right? A college degree, if you
especially nowadays, while everybody gets stuck in debt.
College degree's worth $100,000 at least, so that's a good deal for you. But you might not have any spending money. You might have any money, right? What happened a few years ago, it was also considered an improper benefit if your coach took you out to dinner one night and said, hey, let's go out, let's have a one-on-one. I want to get to know you better. Let's go get a hamburger at Sizzler. I don't know. That was against the rules. And a player complained and said, hey, I'm hungry. Like, I don't have enough money for food. I'm playing on this team. And magically, they were able to change the rules so that kids could get food and be fed and get that benefit, right?
What was the concept between behind not letting them make money?
There's what they'll tell you, and then there's the cynical side, right? What they'll tell you is, well, these are amateur athletes, and they're only in college, and they should be focused on their students, their athletes. They shouldn't be treated like professionals. However, a lot of these players...
Treated like professionals would mean paying them.
Right. Right. And these players, especially when you consider this, you know how much money... These teams make for their schools insane amounts of money. So when they tell them, you're an amateur. But now it seems like here's a cool thing that'll be fun, is it means that EA Sports potentially can make NCAA football again.
Football?
A football video game that's college based.
NCAA, I thought, was only basketball.
It's all college sports. When I played soccer at Yeshiva University, I was technically an NCAA athlete.
But?
There's no buts. I was.
Okay.
Our team was terrible.
There's no, like, card or contract that you signed or...
No. I showed up one day and they're like, I guess you're good enough. I mean, the Skyline Conference, I played for one season. It was not fun.
Do you have a jersey?
It was way too much work to lose every game. So yes, I did have a jersey. No, I do not know what happened to it. I wasn't interested in keeping it. I do know what happened to my high school soccer jersey. They made me give it back.
Well, my name wasn't on it.
My name wasn't on it either. But I've always been, whenever I've played an organized sport since I was a kid, I've always been number 3.
And were you number 3 in high school?
I was number 3 in high school. I was number 3 in college.
I don't remember. I remember we had jerseys, but I don't think they even had the name of the team on them. I think they just had some numbers. And we were about 4 feet shorter than the other kids we were playing against.
When we were in... When we were in on Machach Ba'aretz, and we had a one-day sort of, I guess you could call it a color war, with Scandinavian Bnei Akiva, we were way all, on average, much shorter than they were. But boy, did they suck at basketball. Like, I'm not a good basketball player. They did not. Okay, they were a little bit better than us at soccer, but they were terrible basketball players. So it was just kind of funny.
They were too busy drinking and having sex.
They were too busy drinking and having sex, which in a way makes the fact that they were worse than us at basketball pretty trivial. You know what I mean? Like, they'd be like, yeah, you beat us at basketball, but we're all going to go on this bus and make out with all those girls that you guys were thirsting after for the last
and
couple of hours.
And smoke and drink and basically...
They were the smoking... what's crazy about it is just the difference in discipline, right? For the American kids who, let's be honest, grew up with more Jewish education
Totally.
And different values or whatever it is, if you looked at a cigarette, they would send you home. So, and then these kids were like in the same building as us.
When I was at Bnei Akiva camp in Switzerland with Bnei Akiva Scandinavia, they were told that they were not allowed to smoke cigarettes. So all the kids managed to get around this prohibition by all using chewing tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just spitting everywhere, the entire camp. They got chewing tobacco. They got, like, the sucking tobacco.
Yeah.
But it was in little tiny packets.
Okay.
So it never, like, fell apart in their mouth or anything
so
like that.
So they have it in their mouth
so they just shoved it in their lip, and it was, like, in a little tea bag kind of packet.
Yeah.
And they would just suck on it all day.
As the rednecks will say, just a pinch between your cheek and gum.
Whereas the madrich, who was, like, constantly running after them to not smoke and drink, he had his own tobacco where he, like, pushed it into a device, and then he pushed the thing on the bottom and it popped out, and then it was just pure tobacco and like a ball that he had mushed together with a musher. Like, he had a whole device,
mm-hmm.
and he was on that, and he was yelling at the kids about doing something wrong, and it slipped out from his gums and he swallowed it,
and then he vomited everywhere,
vomited his brains out for like 45 minutes because he had swallowed molasses tobacco. Like, it was terrible.
It's
but
horrifying.
Everyone, I mean, the kids had a great time watching him just vomit, because it was upcomings, you know, for telling kids off. But when they confiscated the alcohol, not all of it made it onto the street.
Duh.
So
that was also a thing, like, for the American kids, if you even smell a cap of a bottle of vodka, you'll never work in Bnei Akiva ever again until the end of your life. Okay? Fine. So you have a Shabbat off, right? So people go here, there, whatever. I ended up going with my friends to one of my friends' uncle in Neve Eliza, in the Shomron, right? That the aunt and uncle, that family, they had celebrated the bar mitzvah of one of their sons the week before. So the house was packed with booze.
Right.
And guess who's very generous? The dad. So we just... Nobody from any Bnei Akiva thing that we could have been on would have been there. Like, what happened is kids would get caught because they'd be in the center of town.
Right.
And then they'd get in trouble. We were, like, in the middle of nowhere. Nobody was there. We were just, like, getting lit with our friend's dad.
You know, I'm 39 years old, and to this day, I still don't know how Rav Bina used to catch kids in town drinking.
He had spies.
What does that mean, he had spies? How did the spies know how every single kid in yeshiva looks like? Like, I always
they're
wonder,
well,
like...
They're well-trained?
What?
Maybe they're well-trained?
I don't know. It seems like a weird thing to... I always wonder, just out of curiosity. I mean, I was allowed to do whatever I wanted.
Maybe what it was...
I was in town, and I had a beer, and now I'm getting, like, how did they find out?
Maybe it was, like, he could see it in your soul. Like, he knows the type of person. Like, he's the kind of guy who he takes a look at you, and he knows you. At least as far as he's concerned.
As far as he's... I'll give you that one.
Right?
Okay.
Because the same thing happened to me at Gush, which is... My rabbis listened to me speak for 5 minutes, saw the way I interacted with other kids for another 5 minutes, and decided, that's the way we're going to interact with him for the rest of the year. Never trying to actually get to know me, just deciding that they did know me and then treating me that way.
So they... What? The words that came out of your mouth just said that they based their opinions on you based
minutes,
on things.
On 10 minutes of me being in a new situation, overcompensating for whatever insecurities I was feeling at the time, and said, well, I'll never have to ask him about himself or try to get to know him because I got this guy pegged, which was wrong, and was wrong the entire year, and that's why I don't have a connection with any of them, even though some of them try to crawl out of the woodwork and ask me for money very awkwardly.
Well, awkwardly, I just get emails all the time.
Oh, no, no, I got texted from my Rebbe, from my rabbi from Shana Aleph, and it was like, dude, you didn't care about me then. I can't imagine you care about me now. I'm pretty sure you want money. Would you please just come out and say it? Now, I didn't ask him that. I wanted to, desperately.
Well, he said, hey, what's up?
Yeah. Trying to get to know me a little bit and be, and it was like super awkward.
How many years after you had left the Gush?
It was, this was like 4 months ago, so 20 years.
4 months ago.
He's trying to understand what I did for a career, and I explained it to him, and then he wrote me back. He's like, so, if I understand you correctly, either do this or that. This was wrong, and that was also wrong. And I was like, I don't have time to explain this to you. Maybe when I have time, I'll write you back.
And that was it?
And I never responded to him, and he never wrote to me again.
Okay, but he didn't ask you for money.
No, but he wanted money. I mean, I actually texted a friend of mine who's an old school Gush guy as well.
And he also contacted him?
He's like, that rabbi has no capacity for small talk in any way, shape, or form. So yes, of course it was going to be an awkward. There was no chance it wasn't going to be an awkward conversation.
So it's weird that he didn't ask you for money, having gotten
what
even
I wanted
that far.
To do is to just be like, listen, Rav Mordechai, would you just ask me for money, please?
Maybe he's like has a list of kids that he
of
wronged
course.
In the past. And he was trying to make
wrong me. He never wronged me.
He ignored you. And
okay.
You were his responsibility.
Fine. That's what they do to all the kids at the Gush. They ignore you. That's why we got away with the things that we got away with. And nobody ever knew about it. Even though all they had to do was knock on my door once and they would have caught us.
Right. But on the other hand, aren't you glad that they didn't do that? Because
I'm totally glad because I would have gotten sent home. And I would have gotten in tons of trouble, and my life would have taken a completely different path.
But had they been interested in you from day one, would that have prevented you from doing any of that stuff?
Had they tried to meet me and to get to know me and befriend me in a way that was more towards what my personality really is, I still would have done, at least for a little while.
A lot of kids clean up their act after Pesach.
Not after Pesach, around Hanukkah time.
I remember kids coming back.
After Pesach, the year is almost over.
Right, and a lot of kids like come back then and sign up for Shana Bet. Like, a lot of Shana Bet signing up happens after
but
Pesach.
All that means is that the kids went home to America and were like, I don't want to go to college yet. Mom, Dad, can I stay for a little while? That's why I went Shana Bet. I didn't want to go to college yet.
You were in Shana Bet?
For half a year. My parents were like, you can stay till January. And then you have to go to YU. I was like, great. So I did that. It was awesome. Shana Bet was in some ways even better than Shana Aleph because I felt more established. I was a little bit older. I had all my friends in Efrat.
Did you go to classes, Shirim, ever?
All the time.
Yeah?
I never missed Shir.
That's cool.
I always went to Shir in the morning. In fact, they gave us this whole thing. They're like, listen, we know it's the Super Bowl. We know a lot of kids want to stay up late and watch it. We're telling you that we don't think you should because it'll detract from your Torah learning, right? Okay, fine. I guess it's a reasonable thing to say. So,
I'm not going to compromise. Don't ever go out watch the Super Bowl. Like,
well, the thing
it's
that
too
they
much.
Should
it's
do,
too
the
much.
Thing that that yeshivas should do, and the thing that Reishit does, which I think is a good idea, although they do it in a little bit more of a weird way. The point is that, you know what they should have done? They should have said, hey, everybody, we're going to all watch it together. We'll get a big screen. We'll bring us all into a room, and it'll be a fun thing that we can all do as a yeshiva. Then none of you have to go to sports bars. None of you have to sneak anywhere. And then tomorrow we'll start shir an hour late. But they could never allow themselves to let, anyway, so the next morning, now, that year, who was playing in the Super Bowl? It was the Baltimore Ravens against the New York Giants, okay? The Baltimore Ravens, that had just a few years earlier been the Cleveland Browns, but it had been moved away.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, I do like watching the Super Bowl, but I'm either going to watch a New York team win,
or I'm going to watch my team.
My old team that became a new team win. So I said, F that, I'm not going to watch the Super Bowl. Why would I watch? Why do I want to see
two things that's going to make me... So that was the night that you went to the base.
So the morning, I'm in Shir. Kamoshe Tzarich.
Right.
And my rabbi's like, wow, Johnny, I'm so proud of you. You came to Shir. Right? In a really kind of patronizing way. Like, oh, I thought you for sure.
Of all people.
And so, and I told him, I said, I don't want you to think that I did it for the right reasons. And I explained to him how I don't want to see my old football team win, and I don't want to see a New York team win. And he went, good enough for me. And then we had Shir. But yeah, I always went to Shir. The only part of the day that was not super Torah productive for me was Night Seder.
Like ever.
After dinner, it's like, I just want to go hang out and go to bed and stuff like that. I can't stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning learning even more. Like, hey man,
every night?
Some people did. Like, it's like, dude, I've been learning. I learned for 12 hours today, okay? That's pretty good for me. I have the attention span, you know, of a red-breasted warbler.
I had a very different...
You were also older.
I was much older.
And you were... Were you a madrich, officially?
No. No, but I worked for the yeshiva, but I wasn't a madrich.
What did you... Was
I was the medic.
Yeah.
And I was just around, and I went to all the shirim, and I ate all the food, and I stayed on their campus, but they didn't pay me. And
But you didn't pay them?
Not. I paid them very little.
Okay, that's a pretty good
deal. I gave them, like,
deal.
A symbolic... you know, and like my day ended at like, I don't know, dinner time. Like I had dinner and then that was it. And I'd go off and do my own thing. And I I did go to night cheer sometimes. That was a thing, right? I don't know. What was night cheer?
You would either have, sometimes there would be an actual cheer that somebody would give, or you would have a night seder, chavruta. Luckily for me, my Shana Aleph and my Shana Bet, I had night seder chavrutas who didn't really want to learn that much. So we would go to their, you know, somebody's dorm room and just, like, listen to music.
A lot of my days ended after, like, I'd go to one class or something like that after dinner, and then that was it. And then Thursday night, I told the yeshiva that I would never be available Thursday nights because I had just gotten out of the army.
Tangent, right.
Because I had just gotten out of the army. But my rabbis were very different than what you went through.
Just, my rabbis
were... They just seemed nicer.
My rabbis weren't...
Ravina aside, who tried to kick me out.
It's not
in.
That my rabbis weren't nice. They don't have terrific people skills.
Isn't that super important to being a rabbi?
Yes, which is why the next...
Specifically at a yeshiva.
Which is why my Shana Bet, a new rabbi, joined the crew, and he's like the most personable, warm, kind person you've ever met in your life. And that brought... But that's the whole thing about Gush, is known for being like a cold and indifferent place.
Sign me up.
Everybody's just like hyper.
Sign me up. Cold and indifferent.
Listen, I didn't really have a choice.
Nobody needed a medic. Okay, so Malia asked, "What if people needed medics at night?" Well, they weren't paying me exactly enough for that. I was mostly there for. I was there the few times that people passed out. I was there when somebody ran through a window.
I'm gonna share.
I was there.
You all should share as well.
I was there. Which rabbi did Mike? They tried to kick him out. Yeah, Ravina tried to kick me out. I was 24 years old, and he tried to kick me out because one of the Shana Bet guys, and I want you guys to picture the worst stereotype of a Jew, like crooked nose, humped back, you know, like a hunchback, and like nails. Like that's kind of
like
how
a,
I see
like
him.
Like a what's it called? Like a propaganda picture.
Yeah,
of
like
a
probably. Yeah, that's who this Shana Bet kid was. And he went to Rav Bina because, and he said, Michael's telling kids to go to bars.
Were you?
No. I mean, yes. But if I just say yes and leave the story like that, would you believe me?
Yes. But I know there's more.
Of course there's more. The Shana Aleph guys, who were 18 years old, were telling me they were going out drinking. And I said, listen, if you're gonna go out drinking, and this was in the year 2000 and I want to say 2004. I was like, there is one single bar in the entire city that has a two-dot kashrut. And at the time, that was true. At the time, there was only one bar that served food and had a two-dot, and that was the bar called O'Connell's, which still exists today.
Mm-hmm. Cool, yeah, nice right? place.
At the time, it was the only bar, and I was like, and it was off the beaten path because it wasn't next to the Stardust or the Godfather. It wasn't in Crack Square. It was off of Crack Square, down the street a little bit, and it was kosher. And I was like, people don't vomit there. You know, like, that's not the kind of...
It's a classier establishment.
Right, and I was like, if you're going to go to this place. Go to the place that has a two-dot kashrut. And they're like, Michael's telling Shana Aleph kids to go drinking.
Do you remember the guy's name?
No.
I don't mean that you should...
No, I really don't know his name. I'm not sure I knew his name at the time either. He was Schmendel.
Did you beat him up? Did you talk to him about the fact that he ratted on you? Did you go up to him and were like, hey, you're a piece of garbage. Why would you do that? Do you have any idea what you're doing?
Yeah, I think I did. And he just went, you're not allowed to tell kids to go drinking.
And you were like, I didn't, but you're an idiot.
Yeah, I basically did. Okay. It was, you had rabbi issues. I had, like, kid issues. Like, there was this Shana Bet guy who hounded me all freaking year that I should be learning more, and I should stop going to a bars, and I should stop drinking, and I should only have Torah, and I shouldn't hang out. Like, the Shana Bet guy just kept going after me this whole time. And he kept going after me, and I was like, I refuse to listen to whatever you're saying anymore. I want you to go out and have a beer with me, and then I'll listen to what you have to say.
And he was like, no.
And he, no, eventually we went to a cafe, and he ordered a beer at a cafe. What's interesting to me now, though, is that I don't think the guy wears a kippah anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think there's a very high churn rate in terms of people who are still religious from my year. And my year was like a weird gush year, because we were all very smart, but nobody really followed the rules.
There's so much... I don't want to get back into burnout, but it's still crazy to me that most of the kids from my high school class don't wear a kippot anymore.
I think that my class is a high percentage that are religious. They might all still be, for the most part, at least outwardly. I don't know what they feel on the inside, but yeah. So, something that I've been feeling a lot lately is how bad Twitter is for my mental health. And I've been trying very hard to cut back on it. And I'm doing okay.
What is the draw?
The draw is instant information constantly.
But it's not real information or good information.
Sometimes it's fun, but I've curated my feed with a lot of... Because I was using it in the war to get instant updates, I've never been a heavy user until the last 6 months or so. I
quit.
I
deleted
one of the
Twitter.
Things that I did that was smart is I took it off my phone.
So now you go on
so
your
I go
computer.
On the desktop. Sometimes when I'm at work, I'll check it. And it's just like a miserable place full of hate and anger and
where
despair.
Is there not a miserable place full of anger? Instagram.
Well, Instagram can be that too if
you
want it to
follow
be.
Those.
But my Instagram is all like artwork, toy cars. And action figures and electronic music. Less electronic music.
You said that you were going to be leaving 9GAG recently.
Yes.
Is there a connection between the two?
Well, the connection is that 9GAG has been getting more and more anti-Semitic. And it used to be like they would make a joke about Jews the way I would make a joke about an Indian person. Just like, yeah, we make jokes about other people. We do. That's life. We make jokes about each other. And that's okay. But now it's gotten a little bit.
Can you give an example of mean-spirited Jewing?
Sometimes, in a post, it used to not be this way. Where if you can take this post in a Jewy way or not, right now, if there's any chance that you could take a post in a Jewy way, there's gonna be comments making fun of Jews in it, and it's like it's enough of that.
There was, so Hot Ones Tonight has Malcolm Gladwell on.
I watched it.
I have not watched it yet. I wasn't really sure who he was. I asked Eugenie, and she was like, here are five Malcolm Gladwell books that I have right here on the desk. But what they've been doing recently is giving a quote from the episode and going, who's the guy? Right. Right? Who is the person, quote, that we're quoting, who's going to be the guest this week? So the quote was, Gucci Mane read all my books while he was in prison.
Okay.
And I was looking at all the guesses in the comment section, who's going to be the guy? And somebody wrote Adolf Hitler.
Whoa.
So I clicked on this guy to see who is this, you know, who's this guy that wrote, who thinks that this is a funny joke. And the guy's posts on Facebook were very, like, very polar, very, very, like, some of them were like, I'm really deep in my depression right now, depression is difficult, anxiety, I feel this, it's all issue. And then a lot of his stuff was just, like, disgusting humor.
Okay.
Right? So it was like, feel bad for me, I have issues, I'm gonna mock everybody else's issues. And the common thread between all of his posts were that there weren't comments or likes on any of them.
Right. That's the thing
that Though he had so many friends.
Sometimes the thing you'll see on Twitter, and by the way, Jews, I love you all, but you take the bait 100% of the time. People will write something anti-Semitic or whatever, and people will start jumping at that person. It has 3 followers. They're just some troll on a burner account. Probably not even a real person. Might just be a bot. It could be just
they
some
have
random...
anti-Semite bots?
I mean, it could be a person. But that person isn't a person the way we think of people. In other words, that person's sole job is to be on Twitter to say anti-Semitic shit until they get kicked off, then start a new account and keep saying anti-Semitic shit. So, it's just like this terrible place where, you know, and this is something that we've talked about a lot, where you'll see, you know, the Jews, in a way, are amplifying the reach of the anti-Semitic post, because they're going, I'm outraged, so I'm going to share it, right? And this it happened to me several times in the last week.
But that's everything on the internet. That's the entire internet.
But no website gets me in the way where I'm having a good day, and then I read something, and all of a sudden, not that it ruins my day, but that it's like, oh, that took some of the shine off of my mood. Yeah.
But that's because your Twitter is curated differently than all your other apps.
It's right. Not necessarily... It's curated for news and updates more than it's curated for entertainment.
And your news terrible. Brings you to anti-Semitism.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And I follow a lot of good and important and interesting people, right? Like Avi Mayer is the head of a big shot in the Jewish agency, or Michael Dixon, who's the head of Stand With Us, you know, all these kind of like activists. I follow Ben Shapiro. I follow.
Right. But if you follow all these people, obviously all their haters are going to be commenting on their shit. You're going to see a lot of hate
sometimes. And then otherwise they'll just share it. Like the whole thing with Jake Tapper and Ilhan Omar that happened a few days ago, where she tried to clarify her comments about when she said Hamas, Israel and
Hamas are the same.
No, she would never say anything bad about Hamas. She was saying that America and Israel are like terrorists or whatever it was, and she went on Jake Tapper and said a bunch of stuff that was basically just as bad, just couched in her civility, and it was gross and terrible and angering. Now, if I didn't have a Twitter account, I would have never known that any of that happened. Maybe I would have read about it.
All her followers
would
have.
Maybe I would have read about it in the news when I read the news in the morning, or when I check it sometime in the afternoon. I would have seen, oh, she said something terrible. And then you're thinking, like, you know, the thing that I was getting upset about is, you know, especially when you talk about Ilhan Omar and progressives and the squad and stuff like that, right, is that there is a definite rise in crime in America, okay? But nobody can sort of agree on what the rise is. Now, in some cases, crime has gone down. One of the reasons why crime has gone down, let's say New York, for example, a few weeks ago, they dropped charges against 600 people who had been arrested in
the riots,
or looting, or anything. 600 people, charges dropped, right? So those crimes get taken off the record. So that's a drop in crime in a way. However, gun deaths are up and rising across America, right? And but
it's all those people.
But who AOC are fighting for AOC gun rights. Is like, it's hysteria. Crime isn't really going up. And it's like, I don't know what you're looking at that I'm not looking at, right? A 10-year-old boy was shot to death in your district, and you never even said anything about it. You never even commented on it. You never even wished the family peace in our time for the tremendous loss of their child. Like, you didn't do any of that because it doesn't fit the narrative, which is white people are evil and black people are oppressed. Fine. And then I was thinking, like, what do you do? What can you do? How can the situation change?
It can't, right? Unless
it can change. And here's how it has to change.
Okay.
Right? We're seeing it already in the mayoral elections in New York. Okay? The current leader, as far as the last time I checked, is this guy, I forget what his first name is. His last name is Adams. He is a former cop, which tells you, even though he's running as a Democrat, he's not a progressive. He's a former cop. It's telling you that the voters are seeing the violence and they're voting for law and order, which means that, and I'm sorry to say it this way, but in order for things to get better, it sounds like they have to get worse, right? Because what you need to happen is you need violence to get so bad that the people who are voting for the progressives are saying, hey, wait a minute. Wait just one gosh darn minute. There are bodies everywhere. There are people getting shot to death constantly all over America. Well,
you know what's interesting? That we need violence to make things better was the progressives' explanation about why all the protests and the burnings and the fighting and all that had to happen, because changes weren't getting made, and changes. All the progressives, many people on the left, there were memes all over the place that in order to make real changes, no real changes throughout history have ever been made without violence.
Here's what's crazy. You take the cities that voted to defund the police, right? St. Louis, crime is up. Minneapolis, crime is way up. Seattle, crime is up. New York, crime is up. Okay? All the cities that voted to defund the police are now seeing a rise in crime. And thousands of police officers quit last year. Thousands of them all across America. For example, in Asheville, North Carolina, a bunch of police officers had quit, and people were like, yeah, the police officers have quit. That's what we want. We want to see police reform, whatever, defund the police. And it's like, what about this article that says that crime in Asheville, okay, it's not the most dangerous city in America, but and across the board, it is above the national average in crime. What about that? And somebody replied to me like, defund everything and abolish the police. And then I replied to him, and then what? And that person replies to me, I don't know, man. I never went to college. Which I thought was hilarious. And then somebody else wrote in a basic breakdown of the main talking points of why you want to defund the police, how you want to rework the funds, you want to offer more social programs, you want to be able to have nonviolent crimes be responded to by social workers. And by the way, I'm okay with a lot of that. I like the idea of reforming the police department. I like the idea
of... I don't like the idea of the social workers.
I like the idea of training the police more and better and giving them not the resources to have tanks to drive through the streets, the resources to be able to work with people and heal their connection to their communities.
Yes, police should go to 6 months of
social. I also think that there are some situations in which a police officer unnecessarily escalates the situation simply by being a police officer. It just puts people on edge. And I don't think that every single time some guy or woman is wigging out in the middle of the street that a police officer needs to come. Sometimes you could send a social worker who can talk to this person and help them get the help that they need because you're dealing with a mental illness, right? A person with a mental illness sometimes is going to see a cop carrying a gun, and that's going to make him freak out even more.
Sure.
So there is, and obviously I'm not saying, I'm not saying that we should in any way defund the police, and I'm not saying that we should, and if anything, we should like give the police, here's what we should do.
More
training. We should
training.
divert some of the funds away from the police's military gear and use that to get them some better training.
100%.
And again, that's not to say that police departments don't need a specifically trained tactical squad for specific situations. Absolutely. Of course they do. If, God forbid, we're talking about a large metropolitan area, if, God forbid, there's a terrorist situation, you want a highly trained squad of guys able to go deal with that. Of course. If you're doing a raid
on the movies have told us that all those guys are bad anyway.
Well, that's the thing also. I was talking to a friend of ours who's a police officer, and some of my... I was mentioning... Okay. Yesterday... Is he watching? He'll be listening to the show at some point. Shout out to him. I don't want to mention him by name because whatever.
Yeah, he probably doesn't want people to know that he's a police officer.
Yesterday, I was there were a building across the street from me had a bunch of cops, and everything was looking very serious, and I wasn't sure what was going on. They had cordoned the place off, they had put up some police tape and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, they left. And he was like, oh, I guess they were done. I was like, yeah, they were so done. They took their tape with them. He's like, they cut the tape down. He's like, of course. Why would they leave it up? And I'm like, I thought that a crime scene has tape up. Or maybe I watch too many movies. He's like, you watch too many movies. When they're done with a crime scene, the tape comes down and the crime scene is not a crime scene anymore.
If there's nobody to guard the crime scene, means that there's
If they don't need anybody to guard the crime scene, that means that the crime scene has been processed to the satisfaction of the officers in the department involved, and then they don't have to
The truth is, some people do bad stuff because they don't think they're gonna get caught, and also they don't care about authority at all. And if there's no one there to utilize that authority, no one's gonna care.
Right. Like,
teaching is a microcosm of society because you have thousands of people who are not the same person with different ideas from different backgrounds, and some of them, when you go, hey, they go, oh, I'm so sorry, and you go, hey, and they go, fuck you.
Right, sometimes.
And there's different people out there. And the fact that I can stick people in kid jail, detention, or phone up their boss, their parents, and go, this kid should be canceled, that's a power that I have, which allows me to do my job.
Right.
All the schools where teachers don't have any authority, those kids are insane. Always.
Teachers gain authority in one of two ways, and sometimes both. They either gain authority by being an authoritative figure, or they gain authority by the school organizational systems backing up their desire to instill discipline in the children.
It's usually a little bit of both.
Right? But if you have a school where the teachers are dopes and the administration has no idea what they're doing, you have an experience like I did in high school. Now the school figured it out. It took them a long time, but they figured it out.
Yeah, so, well, as the meme that my student made for me was that I get to win... I win arguments automatically by being smarter than my kids and being able to throw them into detention whenever I choose.
Do you know what I would think would be a really cool way to instill discipline in a school? Does your school have a social worker?
We have
guidance counselor.
Sure, we have one for each grade.
Okay, so that's one person who's responsible for 500 children.
Plus, yeah.
Plus, okay, that's insane. But this
we also have a school psychologist.
That's insane. That school psychologist needs a staff. I'm sure there's no budget.
No, her staff are the guidance counselors. Our guidance counselors don't guide kids in their future.
They help talk them through personal
issues. It's all about personal
issues. So I think that a more interesting way, for example,
it's just they don't need PhDs to do it.
Let's say here's a better way, or what I think would be a more productive way to do, sorry, I have a little heartburn, to do a detention, okay? What happens in your school? You come an hour early, right?
You come in half an hour before school begins.
What do you do for that half an hour?
Nothing.
You just sit at a desk.
You have to arrive. You have to sign in that you're there, and then you can wander around the school.
Could you leave and go get a sandwich and come back?
Once you enter school, you're not allowed to leave, but there's two kiosks on school campus.
Okay. What if, instead, your detention was you come into school, you have a 30-minute session with a social worker.
There's not enough social workers.
How many kids, on average, have detention every day?
You are late to class. You have to come half an hour early. You get a disturbance from class, you have to come half an hour early.
Okay.
You don't come to your half an hour early, you get a second half
when
an hour
When I was
early.
In high school, the way my teachers operated was, we had a teacher, for example, who, if you would walk into her class late, she'd be like, Mr. Steiner, if you're going to be late, a good idea would be to sit down, and that was it. And it was never mentioned, and I never got in trouble for it.
Okay.
So,
we have teachers who will send you for detention for being late if they see you in the hallway after the bell has rung.
What if you have a note that says you're allowed to be?
Why would you have a note? They don't do that here. They don't do notes here.
So I don't know you. You kid in
no,
the hallway.
No. It's because every teacher can give out detention.
So you can give out detention to whoever you want, whenever you want.
But nobody does that. Listen, there are classes that are just canceled, so there are always kids wandering around. But if I'm walking to English class and I see a kid talking to his friend in the little hallway outside, I go, the bell rang
okay.
15 minutes ago.
So,
you know I'm late already. Like,
so
what
a kid,
you?
So a kid, okay, outside of being late to class, being in the hallway when you're not supposed to, and maybe making a joke or two ever to the regular joke making in class, enough to get you sent out of class. Kids do worse things than that
oh,
also
sure.
get them in trouble.
Yeah, there's suspension.
So okay.
There's no
there
expulsion.
So, yeah, expulsion is ridiculous.
Nobody gets expelled.
A student
spit on a teacher last year and didn't get expelled for it.
Okay. That student should go into a program. And for now, for the next 6 weeks, once a week at least, and we'll assess afterwards, you're going to have a session with a social worker in the school.
Or what? What if the parents go, no?
Why would they say no?
Ah, because they're not friars. How dare you say my kid needs help?
Look.
That doesn't matter.
Look at your kid. Your kid spit on an adult.
Yeah, man.
He needs help.
And you know what the worst...
Did the parents come and argue about that kid?
Most likely. They did. And they went to the Erie. They like, they tried
oh,
to get
they
everything.
The ones who know?
Everyone knows someone.
So the problem
but you know
with
what the
my
worst
plan
part
is?
Is
the
parents. The worst part was that the teacher was required to teach that kid again.
Okay. What does that mean?
That this kid literally spit in the teacher's face and nothing happened.
Okay.
And the teacher had to go sit in a class with a kid who had spit in their face.
My
and
daughter
just pretend
once
as if
spit in my face.
Your
I
daughter
dad.
Is yours.
I don't own her.
You
but
do own her. You do until she's 18. If you don't feed her or she gets sick, you
no,
will go
no
to jail.
Yeah.
Right? A la Louis C.K. Right? Eat the chicken, I'll go to jail, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I thought you were like, he went to jail because his kids wouldn't eat and they died? What?
But that's my point, is that it's how disrespectful is it to the teacher that the teacher is then supposed to go in and pretend nothing happened, even though all of those children watched a kid spit in their
so
face.
So if it was me, I would mention it once every class. Yeah, I turn it into a joke.
So knowing that people like you exist.
Yeah.
How would
no,
you...
No, as a teacher. If I was the teacher, I'd be like, you know, I'd be doing something on the board, and I'd be like, it's kind of like, it's this, this, or this, and whatever. Kind of like that time that Yotam over there spit in my face. Was the kid's name Yotam?
I have no idea.
Gave me a look like I almost somehow said his name.
No, I was just, what does that add to the...
I don't know. It just like constantly brings it up.
Why would that be good
for
the teacher?
Because things fester when they're underneath the skin. Trust me, I have enough things still in me.
They don't care that things fester.
Who doesn't?
The school.
I don't give a shit about the school. I'm talking about
the
teacher. The
school is disrespectful to the teacher. The
sure.
teacher cannot.
The teacher can't do anything about the school.
All you're doing is constantly. It's like going. Hey, remember that time that you totally skipped out on school and there were zero consequences for you?
all the time.
How would that put give the teacher authority?
It would, and maybe they could. The teacher could spin it in a way that the kid's classmates are like, "Yo, this kid's gross," but they probably thought the kid was a hero. I mean, it depends if they like the teacher or not.
So I'll give you an example. So
was this a likable teacher? Was it like a I feel bad for this teacher because this teacher's like not good enough?
No, it was this teacher's totally fine and did not deserve that at all.
Okay.
Like there are times where you yell at a kid, sit down, and the kid goes, fuck you, and leaves.
Okay.
Okay, there's always that kid. There's tons of kids. You tell them, if you tell them, leave my classroom, they go, no. If you tell them to stay in your classroom, they go, no.
Yeah, okay.
We've called the police.
Sure.
We've called police. Kid refused to leave the classroom.
We got the police called on us once. You know what the police did? They told the teacher who called them to get her own house in order and stop calling them. But nowadays, we would have gotten arrested. Times have definitely changed in that regard.
Listen, a kid refuses to leave a room. It's like a threat to the teacher, like a physical threat to the teacher. And it disrupts and it causes problems. And the last thing we're allowed to do is touch the kid.
You can't touch a kid.
So that means that the kid is preventing work from happening.
Right. The kid has the power.
So then you call the police.
If the kids really wanted to, like if they could ever get organized enough, but kids can't do that because they're kids, they could like really mess a school up.
Yeah, but they'd only be messing themselves up. Is the truth. They'd only be messing themselves up.
I mean, we did that. We had that in my class.
You know what the school's allowed to do without any... You're allowed to move kids around.
What do you mean?
You're allowed to take a kid out of his class and stick him in another class.
Yeah, good. That makes sense.
That's one of the few places where there's a kid.
My high school had 65 kids.
I'm not allowed to talk about stuff like this. Who's listening? Who's listening live? Is there like a list? Can I see who's listening live?
You can't. You've never been able to do
that. Oh, that sucks. There was a kid who was causing problems this year, and he was like one of the loud ones, and slowly, slowly throughout the year, a lot of the other kids realized that he's not good for him.
Yeah.
And they all just sort of slowly turned on him.
Yeah. That couldn't have happened in my class because there were 20 of us.
Yeah. We're 40.
So it's kind of in your grade.
In our class.
Right. Oh, in your... Wait.
40 kids in a class.
Yeah, but there's 500 in the grade.
Yeah, there's 17 classes.
Right. So, in my class, there were 15 boys and 5 girls.
But do kids... Did anyone... Do you know anyone who had to, like, stay back a grade because they failed? Have you ever met somebody like that?
I only knew kids who skipped forward. Sorry.
I don't know anybody who ever got held back anymore.
But you know what, though? There was one year I wanted them to hold my daughter back. I wanted her to repeat first grade, and they're like, we don't do that in Israel. I was like, she's not ready. That's not true. I was like, she's not ready for second grade. They're like, well, she's going.
They do that usually in kindergarten.
Okay, well.
Like, there was a kid, Shalva had a kid in her class, in her Gan, and then when Shalva went up to kindergarten, the kid repeated Gan.
Well, they didn't. I wanted them to, and they were like, we don't do that here. Maybe they don't do it at Naria, yeah, I don't know, but they were like, no.
That's weird.
I was like, she's not ready. They're like, too bad.
So, okay, and they ate that shit for, like, they had problems because of that. You were right. She wasn't ready.
She wasn't. And she did have problems.
And now?
Well, she's going into fifth grade, and...
Has there been a process of catching up? Has there...
Yeah, tremendous process.
Okay, so then maybe that they're right. Maybe they were right to not do it at the time.
No. Because now everything's fine. No, they weren't right. What happened was... We put her on dope. That's what happened.
But that's a part of the process nowadays.
That is a part of the process, yes. But
sometimes
I will say,
people need help.
But I will say, and I believe this firmly, it's fucked up. Okay? It's fucked up that my daughter, who has problems learning, that I can't give her a framework that works for her. No, I have to put her on drugs and make her join the framework.
If you had millions of dollars, you
could afford to do that.
You can't do that. Because
I can't do that.
You can't, but it's impossible.
It's not impossible.
Of course it is. Of course it's impossible to make a framework for each individual kid. It's impossible.
It's impossible.
On a global scale.
Yeah, of course it is.
So, but you can't.
I just don't like it. I don't like that I have to give her a pill every day so that she can accomplish things in school.
Why not?
Because I wish I could give her a schooling experience that played to her strengths and didn't force her into this narrow little box.
People need more than just what their natural strengths provide them with. She needs to learn more skills than what she's naturally good at. If we only pushed what we were naturally good at.
It's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying only push what she's good at.
Then be clear.
What I'm saying is teach her in a way that works with the way that her brain functions. Teach her all the stuff she needs to know.
Everyone's brains function differently.
Right. And most people can do it and can self... what's the word I'm looking for? They can do it themselves and they can conform. Okay? My daughter can't conform...
She can. Give her the pill.
...without the pill.
The pill... The negativity of the pill is solely on you. The pill is a pill. It's a tool. It's a tool. You look at it negatively because you have a personal history with that pill.
And school.
I took those pills, and I don't have any negative feelings towards them.
For decades.
You never even tried them.
The pills.
You never even went through it.
Right.
There are CEOs who are still taking those pills at age 60 every day because they have a drive and an ambition to continue, but their brain doesn't give out the what's needed. Dude. People need help. People need wheelchairs. People need lactate pills. People need things to help them. People need glasses. There's no difference. The pill helps balance out. There's a problem. That's all it is. Every kid who needs a pill, their brains don't produce enough.
I don't fight it. I give it to her every morning.
And it helps her. And it's great. So what's the negativity solely comes from you.
I wish I could give her a framework where she didn't have to take it.
Why?
Because I don't like the fact that I have to dope my child up to fit
Don't
in.
Think of it as doping. That's your problem. It's literally a perspective issue. You're not doping her. You're helping her.
I'm helping her unlock her true potential.
Yes, because without it, her brain... Every person who has ADHD, their brains
don't... Then I'm telling her,
yeah.
Without your pill, you're not okay. And that's crazy.
Without your wheelchair, you can't get around.
She's not a cripple.
Why not?
She can function.
In the way needed.
Sure. You see her on Shabbat? She doesn't take her pill on Shabbat.
And?
She's fine. She's fine now. Took a while. We got there.
A lot of that comes with age. And without the pill, she would not have been able to catch up.
And years worth of weekly
doping,
therapy.
Okay. Ritalin does not dope. It doesn't just pull you down. Her issue isn't that she's up high. I'm gonna stop talking about your daughter. I'm going to talk about the much research that I've done into Ritalin as a person who takes it, has been diagnosed with it, took it as a child, and as an adult. I've done all of those things.
Okay?
Ritalin, as it works is, your brain, it's not that, oh, I'm really have difficulty. Every person, when they need to concentrate, they go, okay. And then they do this. And then their brain goes, concentration juice? And it gives it to you. Your own body gives you an ability to be able to concentrate. If your body doesn't produce that enzyme, you cannot concentrate. People with ADHD, they have the gland that produces concentration juice. It doesn't work as well. It doesn't work as well. And you're going, I have to eat dairy. I can't. My body produces some lactazine, but not enough to stop me from not pooping myself all the time. So I take one, and it allows me to go through the process. When you give a person a pill, all you're doing is going, here's what everybody else has. Yes, it has side effects because it's not perfect yet. But there's 60 or 70 different kinds.
Just
like a pregnancy pill. Just like a pregnancy pill. It goes, here's what you want and you can now accomplish. You will not get pregnant while having sex. But we have a bunch of problems with it and it doesn't work very well. But most people go, keep popping out babies every 6 seconds or having other issues. Yeah, she's a little bit tired. There's no long-term damage from it. Ritalin has been being taken for 50 or 60 years.
She just switched pills. And the first day she took the new pill, she was sick as hell.
It takes a little time to get used to.
Yeah. Now she takes still, and she's going to be going up. She takes a sixth of one of these pills.
Okay.
A sixth.
I mean, I only know, I mean, my bottle's up there. I don't know what the milligram.
She has when a 15-milligram pill.
Yeah.
She takes a sixth of it.
I have a 30-milligram pill, and I take two of them.
That's a lot of milligrams.
It's what the doctor recommended.
Do you, like, crush them up and snort them, or?
No, I swallow them with water.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing also, like, when all my friends were, like, I don't want to talk about this. Never mind.
But my point is that when a kid needs help, here's help. Don't look at it as what are you taking away from them? You're giving them an ability to deal with society around them. You're helping them. Ritalin is help. Now you can learn all those things that everyone else is learning. And now your own issues won't get in your own way. When a kid is insanely hyperactive, that's a disability.
Yes, in some ways, sure.
So you're not doping them, you're bringing them down. And you know what? It lasts from this hour to that hour, and then school ends, and you get your appetite back at the end of the day, and you're right. It's not... Like, some kids are like, how dare you change my child? Well, your child can't sit still. He's constantly breaking things, and he's also hurting himself.
What's that?
Take a pill.
Oh, take a pill. Your kids, I thought you were dropping small mic.
We're not roofing. We're not roofing anybody. You know, it's a way to help. Your road has blossomed and everything has gotten better since being on there.
It's true.
You're helping your child. You know who doesn't help their children? Parents who go up teachers who go up to parents and go, your kid's a monster in class. And the only person being hurt by it is your kid. And they go, my kid is perfect the way they are. Welcome to reality. No, they're not. You're hurting your kid.
I never said that my kid was perfect the way she is.
I'm talking about other parents who have said, my child doesn't need help because they're fine the way they are. Your child is failing every subject.
Right.
That your kid is not fine.
Right.
You're helping your child. And dude, feel good. Stop calling it doping. And that might help you a little bit. It's medicine.
Yeah, it always ends up being on me, doesn't it?
When a lot of times when we're upset about stuff,
it's not only that, and I definitely don't want to get into this conversation because I'd like to wrap the show up, but it's also has to do with the fact, you know, my absolute hatred and discomfort around school in general, right? I am a great dad on so many levels, but when it comes to school, I am just... I'm so at arm's length. And I know. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to hear about this later because Michael will tell me about how I need to pay more attention to my daughter's schooling and care more and this and that and all that. I know because you do that to me all the time.
You're welcome.
But I hate school and I've always hated school. I understand its value. I understand, but me personally, me Johnny, it just makes me feel like I'm trapped and it's like prison to me. I just hate it so much. And fine, you're right. I am doing fine. I'm doing something good for my kid. I'm helping her be part of a group. Her social life has gotten better. Her grades have gotten better. She's reading better. She's mathing better. She got good grades on her tests at the end of the year. I'm happy about all of that. So, on that bombshell...
One of our listeners, a person named Leora, says that if your daughter had been in an environment that supported her specific needs, she wouldn't need it.
And you're if right. I was rich, I could afford to pay for an environment, but I'm not. So I have to send her into the thing. That's something that we've all talked about.
Also, I have students that have moved out of regular schools, regular meaning the majority of the normal way in schools, and they've gone to one of those other schools... where the kids are all freer and
Montessori.
The teachers... Not Montessori. I'm talking about like one of those democratic schools where there's less of a framework because some people don't work well in frameworks. And you know what happens in those schools? I know what happens in those schools because I still continue teaching those kids. They don't attend class. They're not required to attend class. The day before the Bagruts, basically the teachers give them all the answers to the test. And yeah, then they graduate with a diploma, but they've then wasted their entire schooling. They don't actually know anything. They don't know anything.
So, in an effort to help our children, that's going to do it for us here on episode 5 of season 8 of Tangent Podcast with Mike and Johnny. That's Mike. This guy's Johnny. We love you. We love you guys being part of the conversation. Tell your friends. Tell your teachers. Bring it to school.
One last thing. That Ellie asked me to talk about. So, producer S is talking about. The tourism minister with the ripped body. You saw those pictures? What she was saying was, and I thought this was interesting, that there wasn't a double standard for this guy. Meaning if there had been like a female, like a hot MK, and she was in a bathing suit, and everybody was like, oh, she's so hot. They basically did that to the guy too. Yes. Hey, look at that body. We should stick him on posters. He's so hot and good looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Fine. Some people are.
Yeah, he's muscular. And that's going to do it for us. We love you all. Tell your friends. Okay, bye.